Today's episode is brought to you by Oak Tree Products, the ultimate one-stop shop for audiologists, hearing professionals, and sound professionals. If you're looking for diagnostic or screening equipment, this is the place for you. From the essentials to the hard-to-find tools, Oak Tree has you covered. We've personally been ordering from them for years, and they've always come through. We recently just ordered new diagnostic equipment for four offices through Oak Tree.
During the pandemic, when supplies were hard to come by and everything was up in the air, Oak Tree kept things in stock and moving. They've handled supply chain disruptions, tariff uncertainty, all of it without missing a beat. Whether you're outfitting a new practice or just need to stock up, check them out at oaktreeproducts.com. Again, that's oaktreeproducts.com. We will link to them in the episode description and tell them we sent you when you visit oaktreeproducts.com. Welcome to Hear Us Out, the podcast that has honest conversations which take center stage. Today, we're diving into a powerful topic that hits close to home for so many of us, the difference between trying and doing, and why that difference matters more than we think. Our guest is Carla Andrasik, author of Stop Trying, a thought-provoking and deeply personal book that challenges the pressure to constantly strive, perform, and prove. In a world that equates effort with value, Carla invites us to ask, what if all our trying is actually keeping us from truly living? In this episode, we explore Carla's work from music executive, where she discovered acts like John Andrasik's Five for Fighting, to what it means to stop striving and start showing up authentically and with purpose. We talk about the tension between effort and surrender and how letting go of the need to try harder might be the key to doing what really matters. It'll be an eye-opening conversation you won't want to miss. Carla, welcome to Hear Us Out.
Thank you. Good morning.
So I wanted to start. I know you've been a half marathon runner in the past, and to take on a task like that, you have to do. You can't just try. And I was curious if your perspective on doing versus trying led you to run, or if your desire to run kind of informed your perspective on doing versus trying.
My gosh. So the formation of this whole concept is something that I have been working on my whole life, but literally writing and researching and writing and having it evolve for at least 30 plus years. So, and the running, you know, it's funny, I reference running in my book and in my talks. We can talk about that later, but just because you don't try to run a marathon or half marathon and you train and you do everything you're supposed to do, doing, not trying, doesn't guarantee you success. I'm not going to try. It doesn't guarantee you success, but it will guarantee you a better chance at success. Okay. So the person that's trying to run the marathon, you know, they're not going to be putting in the miles every week. They're not, you know, they're going to maybe give up. They're not going to be hydrated. You know, they're not going to fully throw themselves into it. So the trying mindset's very different. But this really started as a young girl, I would say. And my fascination with, you know, success stories.
Tell us, some people walk through life and they never quite even achieve the doing. They're constantly in trying mode, but they never quite get there. Did you have a moment over time where that shift was made for you, that you've been spending your time trying and you said, nope, I'm going to make that shift? Or was it something that happened gradually?
So I still try. I have to tell you, we all do it. Everybody tries because we're taught to try. It's like a thing we're taught, try harder, try your best. But for me, the way I was raised, it was a very unconventional childhood. My dad was a gambler. And at a very young age, we were put into situations where there's no trying allowed. You are a sink or swim. You're thrown into the deep end. And you got to get out of this, survive, you know. And thank God I didn't go toward the dark side, you know. I wanted to survive this and come out ahead. So that was probably pivotal for me, you know, the formation of who I am, which brought my mindset into every career that I've had. I tend to start at the bottom and then just go whoop all the way up. That's the mindset of a doer. You know, the doers are the leaders. They're the presidents, the heads of companies, the ones that are getting promoted, because they're not saying, I'll try to get you the report. Let's try to schedule the meeting. Let's try to get more clients. We're doing full stop. So that's just who I am. And I'm so triggered. Like, I have a physical reaction when I hear the word try. I'm like, oh, who's trying? Let me help them.
You know, in reading the book, I had heard you talk about the book saying, you know, you could really read this on a flight from New York to LA. And when I read it, it was an easy read, but it was an easy read with a big idea. And I assume that that was intentional. One of the points that really stood out to me in the book was the idea of talking about an idea can feel good. Talking about what you're trying to do can feel good, or what you want to do can feel good. And I think of that, like, in the context of this podcast, that we've heard from people, oh, I really want to start a podcast. I want to do this. I want to talk to these guests. And a year later, you've done nothing. You're a critic, but you've done nothing. And it's being out in the world and doing that has the impact. So can you talk about delivering that message in a way that is accessible? And I don't mean this as a negative, as simple, but it's a big idea.
Yes. There's a little bit of science behind it. So, mm-hmm. Michelle, when you said there are people that walk around and they're just, you know, not accomplishing, right? These are those people. Okay. So the science behind what you've asked me is, when you're at a party or someone's at your podcast and they're a repeat visitor, okay, and they're sitting there telling you, I'm trying to start a podcast, I'm trying to run a marathon, I'm trying to write a book, I'm trying to get my band together, okay, in that moment, they're getting hits of dopamine, serotonin, adrenaline, and they are having all those feel-good neurotransmitters just firing, okay, in that moment. So they feel as if they're doing it. The brain doesn't know whether you're actually doing something or not, or just talking about it. So it's like when I could say to you, oh, there's a spider, you know, or there's spiders crawling all over your arm right now, you're going to get itchy and want to go like that, you know, because that's how you feel. So it's kind of it's a curse, really, because in the moment you feel like you're doing it and you feel really good about it, but it's very short-lived. And that's why nothing happens, because they're just, for some people, sadly, that's enough for them, the talking about it. And it's the person that comes back to the Christmas party or the holiday party for your company, or in your family member that's still trying to restore the car in the garage that grandpa let them, you know? So until they take definitive action, you know, the trying is talking about, thinking about, worrying about, wondering about, ruminating about all the stuff you're trying to do. And when it doesn't happen, there's collateral damage that follows, a lot of collateral damage when you don't follow up on your things that you really want to do.
When I first saw the title, I thought of, this is going to be a tough love kind of approach, of kind of similar to like, pull it together, deal with it. And, or even I've seen you mention Nike's Just Do It. But then that's not what it was at all when I was reading it. Can you talk more about how your approach differs or is more expansive than the simple tough love, just deal with it?
That's so great. You guys are wonderful. I love your questions and the insight into it.
Thank you.
So it's, first of all, it, in a way, it's tough self-love because you have to get real with yourself. But this is a more gentler, broader way of just bringing to our consciousness what it means to try. That's all I want to do, because we have been, oh gosh, there's so much I want to say right now. Okay.
Go for it.
But bringing to our consciousness what it truly means to try now gives you a choice. Now, am I tricking myself? Because before you read the book, you're fooling yourself. When you walk around saying, I'm going to try to call you back, try to spend more time with my kids, try to have a better relationship, try to do whatever, you're fooling yourself. That makes me really sad. People aren't aware. But now when you read the book, you realize this is a loaded word. This has been fooling me. And so it pulls it to a conscious level. And now you have a choice of how you want to take on anything. You can still choose to try. And, I'm not talking about semantics. You know, I'm going to try to take a sip of water. That's a very little action that requires, you know, just doing it. I'm talking about the big ticket items in our life. And I really talk about that in the book, is our health, happiness, careers, relationships, all of it. So here's the other point that's so important. So Nike, by the way, imagine that statement, just try to do it. It would not be as effective as it still is today, 30 plus years later. It's just do it. So the thing is, it's already in, we already know that trying is not the best option. It's already in there. We just don't realize it. So for example, you would not put your money in a bank that says, we're going to try to keep track of your money and we'll try to have it available to you when you want to withdraw it. That's a very quick, nope, not going to this bank, right? And if you had to go for surgery, you know, maybe to remove your arm, and the surgeon said, I'm going to try to remember the correct limb to remove, you are out of there, right? The airline doesn't say to us, we're not allowed to try. First of all, we don't choose to try, and we're not allowed to try. They don't say, can you try to get here at 9:30? Because we want to try to take off. It's be here. There's no trying allowed. You can't try to pay your mortgage or pay your rent, or you'll lose your house. You can't try to keep gas or a charge in your car. So I could go on and on and on with so many examples. So we already know that there are many times we wouldn't choose to try, but we do. We unconsciously just use that as a little bit of a safety net when, for all kinds of reasons, and we can get into that as well.
In the book, you talked specifically about a time where you, when you were a music executive, that you heard a song and you're like, I need to get this to Michael Jackson. This song will be a fit there. And you were young in your career at the time. Can you talk about that, the thoughts in your head that lead you to say, I'm just going to do this? And most people in my shoes are going to say, oh, maybe it should be somebody else, somebody with more experience, somebody who's done this before, somebody who they know. And you just thought, nope, I'm going to do it. That idea resonated with me because when we started this whole podcast, our mantra to it was, why not us? Let's give it a shot. Let's talk to people. And sometimes when you take that step, there's success and it works. And sometimes people are just scared of success, of that idea of it working out. So talk about that thought process of the hearing the song to going to the studio and what's in your brain when that's happened.
Okay, I can tell you a couple of fun stories. And yeah, one of the big reasons that we try is because we're afraid of failure. You know, we want to dip our toe in the water. I'm not sure I'm going to succeed. What will people think of me? For the perfectionist, you know, they have a hard time getting going because they're worried about, like, you know, am I going to do it right? You know, am I going to fail? So yeah, failure and failure, fear of success is really big. I kind of struggled with that. You know, I've worked my whole life. I've had a huge career. I've raised my family. I'm 62 years old this year. Oh my God, I feel like I've been working since I was like 5 years old. And I'm like, what if this goes? I'm going to be working again, you know? So there's all kinds of fears. I have a couple of great stories in the music business. So I had we just had a book party at Diesel Bookstore the other day for the launch of the book. And three of my music business mentors were there. And Kathleen Carey, who was working with me when I did the Michael Jackson thing, was there. And I'll tell you this great story. Tom Sturgis from Chrysalis Records was there, music publishing, where I have another fun story. So again, it's the mindset of I'm throwing myself into the middle here. I have this song. I want to get on Michael Jackson's record. Who didn't want to get on that record? Okay. So the brain and the person at Warner Music Publishing that says, oh, I have this great song, I'm going to try to get it to Michael Jackson, they're going to call the A&R people. And when they don't call back, they're not going to call five times like I would. They're not going to show up at their door at the company with the song like I would, okay? That's the trying. Well, I called, I mailed it in, because at that time it was cassettes. I haven't heard back from anyone, you know? I'm trying to find someone that knows a producer, you know? That's trying. Doing is the only way it's going to get done. So I got the song. I found out where he was recording. That was easy, you know? You could call attorneys. You don't have to just call the record label. You can call the manager, call the attorney, call the whoever, find out who's their photographer. I mean, there's no end. If you want to reach somebody, you do it. So I found out where he was recording and I brought myself to the studio. No one did that. They're like, who are you? And wow, okay, we'll bring it into him. They have to. So whether or not he heard it, although we know he did, that he didn't record it, but I did everything I possibly could, physically bringing it myself. And if I lived in Canada and I wanted to get a song on Michael Jackson's record, I'd call a friend in LA and say, will you bring it to them? You know, like you just have to go deep and go hard and go in. Another very quick story is when I worked for Chrysalis Publishing, Geffen Records was just down the street. And at the time, they had Aerosmith, Guns N' Roses, like really great bands on their label. Do you know who John Kolodner is? Have you ever heard of him?
No.
Hey, he was as famous of an A&R guy as his artists. Like he made Aerosmith. The guy had a long beard. He dressed in white. He looked like Jesus Christ. He did. And he was very, very famous within the music world. And so a song came in from the UK that I knew was going to be a hit for somebody. I knew it. And there were a lot of song pluggers at the company worldwide that could pitch the song. So I asked my boss, I'm like, can you please just give me a 24-hour exclusive? I'll deliver a hit for you. I don't want anyone else to have it. I will do this for you. And he just said, your time starts now. You have 24 hours. So I called Geffen and I called John Kolodner's office. He's the big, big guy that makes all the decisions, you know, at the time. And I said to the secretary, I have a great song. I want to bring it over for John Kolodner to hear. And she said, Carla, he doesn't meet with publishers. He's never done that.
He's at lunch.
You have to find another way to get your song to the artist. And I just said, tell him I'm on my way over. You tell him I'm coming over right now. I'm coming over to the office. And when I got there, his door was wide open. And I'm not sure he was as curious to hear the song as he was to meet the creature that like said, I'm coming over. Because nobody does that. And I went in there and it was a cassette and I played the song. And he said, you're 100% right. This is a hit. I'll let you know who's recording it. And it became the title track to Cher's biggest record that was the crossover American called Heart of Stone. And it was the artwork and a video. And she's one of the biggest artists, by the way, in the world. And so that's the doing. That's answer to your question. That's my mindset. That's my brain in everything I do, unfortunately. And it's exhausting.
Throughout your expansive career, have you ever reached a point where either you came to a dead end or something didn't go your way, where you put everything into it, it didn't work out, it wasn't achieved? And how do you bounce back from that or stay in that positive, achievable, doing mindset?
So here's the beauty and the magic of it. I've never been asked this question before. When you fail, and you've done everything you can, it's amazing. It's amazing. You get to walk away with so much pride and self-esteem in knowing I did my best and it didn't happen. Look at all the lessons I learned. Okay, why didn't it happen? I never feel bad. With this little book right here, I've never written a book before. This is my first book. I have no idea what's going to happen. But I'm already a winner. I am the biggest winner on the planet. I feel amazing no matter what happens. I said I did what I said I was going to do 100%. So failure means nothing to me. It really doesn't. Yeah, you get a little, you're allowed a little bit of a pity party. Like, wow, I really wanted that to happen. And I worked so hard and I gave it my all, you know? So yeah, there's a disappointment that's natural. We're human beings. But the bigger feeling is, okay, you know, like I did it. I did everything I could and it wasn't meant to be. I'm very spiritual. I study Buddhism. I'm not a Buddhist, but I do believe that, you know, we are meant to have what we have and it's in our life for a reason. So whatever your spiritual thing is, you know, that plays into it as well. You have to accept that there are things that are going to be, you know, successful and things that aren't. That's the reality of being a person that's doing. You're not going to get everything you want. It's reality.
I'm smiling. You know, I'm in such admiration. I can't imagine having that mindset all the time. Good for you.
Well, you know what? If you adopt this, you know, I'm not going to try, I'm going to do it. So let's jump for a second. Okay. You guys are successful. You're, you know, you have your businesses, you have the podcast. I have major ringing in my ear right now. I have terrible tinnitus. It's horrible, right? All my years in the clubs. But what's something that you've been trying to do that you can't, that you haven't yet been able to succeed at, Michelle?
Good question. That's a great question. I really want to learn a new language.
Okay. So when do you want to learn the new language?
I put it into ChatGPT last night of local places to learn a new language. I was reading your book and it inspired me to at least look into local places.
This is amazing. You're taking the first step. So, you know, doing that is going to look a lot different than, you know, you didn't say I want to try to learn a new language. So I love that. You're already ahead of the game. So go do that. Absolutely. ChatGPT, there's so many different formats. I mean, there's one that's very famous about the language. I can't remember what it's called. It's
Duolingo.
Duolingo. That? Yeah, I saw one of John's like cellists doing it. And it was so funny. The lady was texting her and asking her questions randomly. It was fun. It looked like fun. So good for you, you know. And, you know, what language are you going to learn?
I either want to learn Spanish or ASL or both, but I don't think I could tackle both at the same time.
No. Start small. Absolutely. Good for you.
You know, when I'm listening to you talk about the book and feeling like you won, it would seem to me like when I use the podcast as the example. When we started the podcast, there wasn't a specific goal beyond talking to interesting people. And if the goal was to write the book, you can't fail. You wrote the book. People are reading it. You put yourself out there. And it's this idea of how do we define our success? And that so often becomes a roadblock for people to actually take the steps of what does success mean to you in the context of the book? Because I could see success as the writing process, then success as the publishing process, then success as somebody reading the book. And did you have a concrete idea of what success looked like in this context?
I did. And let me just back up. If the goal is to write a book, there are probably 30 million people out there right now that have been trying to write their book for a decade.
Trying. Okay?
Yeah. So, you know, writing a book is not such an easy thing, even if it doesn't get published. Just doing the work, you know, outlining your book, writing the chapters, completing a book is so much work. And that's why there's probably 30 million people that have been trying to write a book that have a great story, fiction, nonfiction, whatever it is that they're, you know, they're not doing. So that in and of itself is no small task. So, but for me, I wanted a book to be out in the world. So to me, that was writing the book that is something that's going to change people's lives and getting it published. I didn't really want to self-publish. To me, that didn't count, you know, but it is very valid. Most people self-publish now and are going to sell a ton of books. But for me, I wanted the validation from a publisher. I wanted a team. And so that was huge for me. So that I did have a measure of success. And, you know, there were 3 months in, my agent was pitching the book and we were getting a lot of interest. A ton of interest from the top 5 publishers. I have all the emails from them. We love her voice. We love this message. We love the energy. We think she's phenomenal. Look what she's got behind her to support her. Mel Robbins endorsed my book. Front cover endorsement. Like, oh my God, right? But the big but was we're really afraid she has zero social platform. And I had 12 followers, okay? Still don't even have 1,000 followers on Instagram, okay? I hate social media. Like, it's so, so hard. And it's not who I am. I'm a behind-the-scenes star maker. I will do anything. That was my whole career in 2 different careers, was pushing people and making their dreams come true. But for doing it for myself is very different. And it's a learning curve for me. And I'm not comfortable in that space. But I'm doing it. So I did have a measure of success, but just writing the proposal. When you write a book and you want to get published, you have to write a proposal. That took me 9 months, just the proposal before I wrote the book. So
it's like writing the abstract on a paper before actually doing the research.
Yep. Yes.
Heard of so many instances of people that have written books and they just didn't finish the last chapter because that would require finishing it and actually taking the next step. So they have all these unfinished works. Was there any, what was the feeling for you when it was, you took the very last step?
Amazing. So when you write a self-help book and you put your proposal together and they start shopping it to publishing houses, you don't have to have the complete book. They don't even want the complete book. They want to see your table of contents. So they want to see the whole outline and they want two or three chapters so they can get a feel for your voice, the writing style. You know, what have you got in there? Is there scientific information? Is it personal stories? What have you got? So you really only have to write two or three chapters and have the outline. So when I got my deal, they gave me 9 months. They said, we want to have this out in September of 25. This was a year ago. And if you don't turn it in by November, we're going to miss the deadline. So from the minute I got my deal, it was pedal to the metal. And for me, that was a really good thing. You know, I think having a deadline and a place to, you know, have a goal to get to and a push and a reason really helps the doing process. And so that was all I did. I wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote, and I turned it in a couple of days early. So yes, finishing the last chapter, you know, I go back now and I read it and I've learned so much more since I've written the book because I'm constantly researching. There's a couple of things I'll share with you that are so cool that I wish I put in the book. So I wish I could go back and add it. But anyway, so finishing my last chapter is a big deal because then I was able to turn it in. But I'm sure there are people out there that got publishing deals that didn't finish their book and missed their deadline and never completed it. And the fear is real. You know, we're all human beings. We have realistic fears and reasons that we are afraid to do things. I get it. So this just encourages you. And it talks about each fear and why, you know, why we try. I have a whole section of the book. It's what do we think it means? Why do we do it? How does it hurt us? And how do you move forward into the world without using it? It's a complete guide that you can start on a plane and finish and change your life immediately.
Twisting it into our realm a little bit, you were recording the audiobook version of this recently. Tell us about the idea of you recording that audiobook versus having somebody else record your book for you and what the sound of the story is as compared to the just reading the story for somebody.
When they first asked me, you know, do you want to be a potential to read your book? You have to audition and send them a sample. I was like, no, nope. Let somebody else do that. I mean, even now, I still in the kind of sort of wish somebody else read it because I'm not that person. I'm not the person out front. That's just not my nature. And I'd never done it before, you know? So, but once I got in there and, you know, they encouraged me just to read it conversationally, I said, okay, this is going to be a new experience in my life. That's the category I put it under. That's how I was able to go in and do it. I'm like, okay, Carla, you get to do something brand new at this stage in your life that you've never done. You're going to throw yourself into a new experience. You may be great. It may be terrible, but here we go. I'm doing it. And I just gave myself a lot of grace and, you know, and just grateful that I had the opportunity that they said yes. And they know what they're doing, the company. So they wouldn't have said I could read the book if it wasn't good. And it was fun. And I think I did a good job. And they say that, you know, it's great to have the author read the book, especially if it's a self-help book. So, you know, we'll see. We'll, you know. I'm excited. So that was it. I didn't want to do it. I resisted it.
Can you tell us about the feedback or stories from other individuals who were inspired by you and your work to take an idea and put it into action?
Yeah, I get that a lot. You know, of course, my family and my friends are so proud of me, but a lot of people have said, wow, like I'm only a couple of chapters in. Like, even you're starting to research the language, you know, that makes me so happy. So I am getting that it's resonating with people and that they're surprised by how quickly it's changing their behavior. Some of the feedback has been the exercises at the end of each chapter are really fun, that they really love that. So yeah, so it's just out now. It just came out on the 23rd, but the people that got the pre-copies, you know, I'm getting so much love and so many people that want to talk about it, you know? So it's all been very positive.
Awesome. I want to shift gears a little bit, going back to kind of rooted in that Michael Jackson story or the song that you had found that ultimately was performed by Cher. What is it that you hear that you say this song is going to be a hit? Help us understand, because we know as, hey, you hear a song you like and you just like it. It does something to you. It moves you. You feel something. Talk about it on the discovery end of what is that experience when you are discovering new music?
This is wild. I don't think I've ever told this story because I've never really been asked this question. But so, you know, initially, one of my first jobs was the Department of Defense. I had a top secret security clearance. I worked for Northrop. Started out as the little girl that waved people through with their badges and then very quickly went up into top. I was helicoptered into secret locations. It was crazy. I got out of that. That wasn't a people person job. But then my next job was working for Sunstrand Aviation, which was, they manufactured parts for airplanes. And I was the receptionist, but very quickly became the employee relations coordinator. I was the communication between shop floor, manufacturing, and upper management. That was making people's dreams come true. The shop floor would say, we need a new whatever. We'd put together a proposal. And I did perfect attendance. I just made everybody happy within the company. I never thought I'd be in the music business. It was never a skill. It was never a dream or a desire. And just going backwards for a second, I remember sitting in the back seat of my mom's car, just buckled in, little person. Okay, well, how old would I have been? When did Rich Girl come out? You're a rich girl. Hall & Oates, maybe. Maybe I was 10. We'd listen to the radio. My mom would play the radio. And I remember sitting back there and I'd be able to say, you know, when you heard a song one time, the first time, I'd say, this one's going to be played a lot. That's how I would say it. Mm-hmm. Not it's going to be a hit. I know they're going to play this one a lot. And then I'd hear another song and think, I'm probably not going to hear that one anymore. I just knew. And maybe it was just because I liked it, mm-hmm. but I could tell. And that's the words I would use. I'd say, oh, they're going to play this one a lot. So cut to, I'm working at the aviation company. A boyfriend was writing songs. He was an engineer at Northrop and he'd write songs. He had a little mini studio at home. And I met a guy who wrote The Greatest American Hero, the theme, Believe It or Not. It was a big hit song. I met the guy that wrote that at that time. And I said, if he can get a song on the radio, this is the crazy brain, I can get my boyfriend's songs on the radio. So how do I do that? And I just then got his song recorded in 4 different foreign languages and I just took it to publishers. So I said, how do I do this? I bought a book. This is a great little story. Okay. So I bought this book, The 1991 Songwriter's Market. And in it, it listed all the places you can send your song. It was all the publishers. And it said, like, queue up your cassette. Oh, no more than 3 songs. Make sure you have your phone number on there. Okay. 1991. Oh my God. What am I saying? 1985 is when I bought the book. Okay. This was my, how do I get my boyfriend songs on the radio after I met that guy?
Fascinating.
1991. I'm in it. I'm a featured publisher in the book. This is doing 85. And I didn't even ask to get put in the book. I didn't even realize until like years later, I'm like, wait a minute, this happened and I'm in this book. Right. So threw myself right into the middle of it, started my own company, advertised for songs in the songwriters magazines and stuff like that. And then I got my first job, small job, working as a secretary so I could learn about contracts and build my contacts and took classes at UCLA. I'm at a class at UCLA. I had gotten a song in the mail called Machine Gun Love and Denise Williams was speaking and I brought my song to give to her. She was a guest speaker. And I give her the song. she called me and said, look, I'm a Christian and I can't sing Machine Gun Love, but I like your song. So they changed it. They changed the lyrics, right? So that's how I became a publisher, just like doing it. So how do you hear a song? It's just, you hear so many. And I think there's a lot of heart that goes into it. You just have to follow what you like. And then there's the expertise of, after hearing so many and being embedded with songwriters and seeing the process and knowing it's got to have a great hook. It's got to be quick. It's got to, you know, you got to hum it after you walk away. Like, you just, there's just a knowing. And so that's how that happened for me. That's how I know. But that little girl in the back of the car, when I said, oh, they're going to play this one, I feel like I had a sense way back then.
Do you feel like in this huge successful career that you have had, what is next for you that you want to achieve?
Nothing. So tired. Oh my gosh.
You achieve more than most do in a lifetime. So deserved.
Oh my gosh. So I am thinking about writing a children's book. Because one of my big goals, obviously this message is for everybody, but if we can hit a young generation, like the kids that are 3 years old, 4 years old, 5 years old, and really highlight the difference between trying and doing, because these kids, they're being taught to try harder, try your best, give it a try again, all the parenting magazines, you know, and we don't do that to be mean. We think that we're actually supporting and encouraging them, but I want to replace it. We're not expecting you to succeed every time, but doing your best will give you the best chance of success. And you'll walk away, whether you win, lose, or draw, with great feelings of confidence and self-esteem. So my whole reason for doing this, 100 billion percent, is to help people. And if I can help kids and change that mindset in the formative years, that's what I want to do. And I think that's going to be a lot of fun. So that's my next goal.
I think the title for the children's book is in your current book, and it's called Eat the Peas.
Oh, okay. I'm going to credit you.
Now you have something to do.
Okay. You've just changed my life.
Eric, give her a break.
I freaking love that. Wow.
Eat the peas.
Okay. I can see the artwork now. Oh my gosh. Eat the peas. I think in the book, I say give, I don't know if it made it to the book or not, but in the writing, I had to think, give peas a chance.
Okay.
Isn't that funny?
I'm picturing the like eyebrow raised emoji with a spoon in their hand.
Eat the peas. I think you've just given me the title and now a launching pad. So this
there
is
you
great.
Go.
This is exciting. Now
nice
I'm excited.
Job, Eric.
So as we talk about the other things that you've also done in your life, when we spoke with John, he had mentioned Augie Nieto and the impact that he had had on his life. And you've done work with the ALS charity in his honor. Can you talk about some of that philanthropic work and what led you in that direction? And as somebody who has experience in our family with ALS, there's something really meaningful in working to help and support those families in that cause.
Yeah, yeah. Well, with ALS, of course, John met Augie many years ago. I think our daughter was 4 years old. She's 24 now. You know, then upon meeting Augie and then the people that they brought into our lives at all these galas, you know, they have the fundraising galas. We have one next week. And ever since I met Augie, I've been on the board and he's passed away. And now there are young guys like this guy, Johnny. He was a lacrosse coach. He's probably in his late 20s. There's a kid on the internet right now who's a musician. He's getting ALS. And it's an orphan disease. There's not a lot of attention. I don't know who in your family has it. And I'm so sorry, you know?
Yeah, it was my aunt.
Your aunt? And what stage is she at?
So she passed away a year and a half ago or so. It's one of those diseases that like you can read about it, but until you see it, it's just not good.
It's not good. And it makes you very grateful for everything
yeah.
we have. The first question I say is, what can I do? How can I help? Like if I have the passion to do it, what can I do? So I got on the board and one of my big things is getting donations. So I get hotels to donate stays, artwork, clothing, jewelry, you know, so every year I get to contribute to the auction. So that's one thing. The president of our HOA. Okay. Nobody wants to be the president of the HOA. It is the most horrible job. But for me,
thankless.
Right? We have these entrances. We have six entrances to the homes, mm-hmm. and they're disgusting. They were old and ugly and dying. So, okay, how do I make the change? I became the president. You know, the board was falling apart. They weren't, mm-hmm. hadn't done anything in 30 years. So I became the president, created a new board. It took us 1 year to do what they were trying to do for 20 years and did it. So that all actually happened while I was writing the book. I was doing HOA board stuff and writing my chapters. So that was kind of funny. And then another thing, I love animals. I'm very passionate. And we have a local zoo, the Moor Park Zoo. And the tigers were in cages. Beautiful, you know, long. But I became a board member of the zoo. I had John perform a fundraiser. Like, how am I going to raise money? Who do I know? What can I do? And now those tigers are in a gigantic habitat. It is spectacular. And I'm continuing to raise money and do events and because I love animals. So I guess I like to be busy, but I also just want to follow my passions. It makes me happy.
I'm amazed. You just branch into every direction. It's phenomenal.
I'm taking a break though.
But eat the peas.
But eat the peas is it. It's happening. That'll be so fun for me.
So my last question for you is, for people who might walk through the world who are more on the skeptical, hesitant, negative side, what is your advice for them to take that first step towards doing mind shifting? Anything to get them on the trajectory towards achieving something when that's not their go-to way of thinking.
Yep. And I totally get it. So yeah, the first thing, if you're listening, or it would be get my book.
And we'll link to where you can buy it in the episode description.
Okay. I mean, that's like a really great beginning. But to start small, I mean, teeny, teeny, tiny. And one thing I like to suggest is, wherever you live, we all have the junk drawer. We have the junk drawer that you can't close. That's like got empty tape containers and receipts and pens that don't work. And, you know, and every day we look at that junk drawer and we're like, oh my God, like someday I'm going to try to clean this, right? So the really great first step would be clean that junk drawer out. Because here's what happens. In your brain, you're just passing it by every day. You're letting it bother you every day. It's a tiny little thing. It will take you 8 minutes. You think it's going to take, oh my God, I have to find time to clean the junk drawer. It'll take you 5 minutes because half the stuff is garbage. You throw it out. And then you have this nice, clean, you know, when I do it, I actually walk by and I open it up and look at it. And I'm like, oh, I'm so happy I did that. It looks so good. Because once you complete a small task like that, you, number one, realize it didn't take me as long as it thought. Look at how good I feel just from doing that silly little thing. I cleaned out the glove compartment of my car. You know, I got rid of all the napkins and all the plastic forks and all the straws, whatever, you know, and now I feel so good about that. It's a little hit, but it makes you want to do the next thing. And that little thing will encourage you to take on the next thing and the next thing and the bigger thing. So that's my best advice, is to start small. And, you know, I have a part of the book, it's called Soulful Solutions. Soul, S-O-U-L, Solutions. And there's one thing in there that's so important to me that I use in every aspect of everything I'm doing, and I always have, is I call it the power of silence. And in the book, it's the moving in silence. So what that means is, don't tell anybody, because now you are going to have to answer to people. You're going to have to get their feedback on what they think it is that you're going to finally do, right? Don't tell anybody what you're doing. Just do the work and let it evolve. You don't have to share it. And if you succeed, then you get to share that moment. There were a lot of people that had no idea I was writing a book, family members. That had no idea I was writing a book till I got a publishing deal. And then I got to say, guess what? I did it. But what I did was I kept all that power to myself. It was like my secret. I didn't open myself up to anybody else's criticism or judgment. You know, somebody might have even said out of a loving nature, like, God, there's so many self-help books out there, Carla, really? Like, are you going to add another one? You're never going to do it. You've never written a book. You'll never get a deal. Out of a loving thing to protect me. And then there are people that don't want you to be happy, you know? So they're going to put some. So a next great piece of advice is just be quiet and just start doing for yourself whatever it is you want to do. Start small and start quietly.
It sounds like within that advice, it's experience doing. Experience the act of taking the step, which leads to the next step and the bigger step and the bigger step.
Yeah.
And it's great advice that I think a lot of people would really, really benefit from. And that's why they should read the book.
Read the book. I don't know if we're running out of time, but here's another, like, I just thought of it. Okay. Have you ever heard of Eat the Frog?
No.
This is going to change your life. To your question, it's the first thing I should have said. Okay. Eat the Frog is attributed to Mark Twain. Believe it or not. And he said, if you have to eat a frog, it's best to do it first thing in the morning. And what that means is whatever task you are dreading doing, procrastinating on, trying to get done, really, really resistant to making happen, that's your frog. And you do that first thing in the morning. Get it done. If it's exercise, okay, get up early and get it done. In a recipe, if it's chopping garlic and you hate that part of the recipe, do that first, get it done. Because what it does is it creates momentum. When you do the worst thing first and you get it done, now you've started. And now the rest of the day, the rest of the chores, the rest of the things you have to do are easier because you've gotten the worst one done. If you have to return phone calls or if there's a customer or a difficult phone call, you wake up in the morning, oh my God, I have to deal with that today. Go deal with it. And then it's done. So Eat the Frog is a really, really good tip for people that are stuck.
It's an interesting mantra. Right? So the last question I want to leave with, when we connected with John to have him on the podcast, we talked a lot about the idea of moral clarity and using your voice out in the world. We titled the episode Music That Matters when he was on with us. And he told a story of a few months back, he was in Israel. It happened to be when Iran attacked and there were missiles coming in, and he's there with your son and you're at home. And that's not the only place that he's gone that has been either a war zone or maybe somewhere where people may not consider the safest to be. Can you talk about being on the other end of those experiences, that you're on the other side of the world when that's happening? And even given today's current political climate, that there's risk in speaking up, there's risk in speaking out. And both of you have put yourself out in the public. And can you talk a bit about that and the weight of that, maybe?
Yeah. Well, with John, I mean, oh my gosh, he's the love of my life. It's just our story is amazing. And I worry about him. And as you just said, forget, you know, he went to Ukraine. That was a really difficult, you know, there he was in places where they had bombed, where there were still stuff laying around. I mean, it was really dangerous and really scary. And I remember letting him go. And I let him go. We have children, we're a family, you know, it was really difficult, but I so respect his passion and who he is. I mean, that's what drives him and keeps him alive. So I, you know, Afghanistan was a no, okay? We're not going to go there. Mm-hmm. That I put my foot down. So when Ukraine came up, it was like, okay, you can go to Ukraine. Because he's been asked to go to Afghanistan a lot to perform mm-hmm. the troops and put himself there, but just too worried about that. So Ukraine happened. And then, of course, with Israel, that was really hard for mm-hmm. me. That was very, very hard. But his passion was just so strong. And I just kind of had to just close my eyes. And then he wanted to take our son. And then, of course, no one knew that unprecedented attack from Iran was going to happen while they were there. So it was really difficult. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not. And it's difficult every day because he's mm-hmm. still speaking at a lot of synagogues and Jewish communities. And every day, you don't even have to worry. You don't have to be in Israel or Iraq or Iran or anywhere. It could happen right here. So It's very difficult. And we talk about it. I voice it. I probably, you know, yesterday said something addressing that, you know, and like every day we just talk about it. So, and for me, the only thing I worry about is I just want people to use this message for good. So if there's something you're trying to do, I would hope that it would be something noble and something positive and something that adds to the world and your life, but not take it in a negative way.
That's a good message. And we thank you for the book you've put out into the world and that powerful message that I really think a lot of people can benefit from it. And it's an easy read. It's a big message from an easy read. Why don't you let everybody know where they can connect with you, where they can find the book?
Okay. Books are now on sale everywhere. At Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Target, or wherever books are sold. So, you know, look for Stop Trying. My website is stop-trying.com, which is easy, stop-trying.com. And I have a link to order the book there. And you can get the Try Baby test. That's the thing I came up with. Don't be a try baby if you go to the website and sign up. And then my one thing that I've been doing that I'm learning and I'm doing better and better every day are my Instagrams, because you'll get a daily hit of why trying hurts us, and they're fun. Eat the Frog was on there. There's all kinds of great things. So Instagram is just at Carla Ondrasik. That's probably one of my favorite ways for people to connect with me and get the message. So that's really working. And
we'll link to all of those in the episode description, so they'll be available for everybody that's listening. So
thank you.
Carla, thank you so much for spending your time with us today, sharing your story, sharing the book.
And we look forward to seeing your many projects that we know you're going to accomplish in the future.
Eat the peas. Eat the peas. The store near you. I love it.